is Business Rockstar.
On the show Shark Tank, you see the edited version of most pitches. Robert Hershevek takes us inside that process.
We film, on average, the pitches in front of us for over an hour. The longest pitch was 2.5 hours. The shortest was 40 minutes. It all gets edited into 7 to 8 minutes. We make up our mind 50% of the time in the first 2 minutes. It's how you stand, the cadence of your voice, how you walk out, all of those things. I want to invest in somebody who's confident without being arrogant.
So how do you get major investor attention to build your brand? Joining us today is Lisa Su, founder of The Winning Pitch. It's great to have you on.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
Doing wonderful. So share with us a little bit about what does the process of creating a winning pitch look like?
You know, to me, I think having a really winning pitch that's going to get an investor on your side, it's really about preparation and practice. I think it's about doing your homework. I think it's about knowing who you're pitching, making sure that whoever you're pitching is someone who invests in your industry, invests the amount of money that you're looking to get into your company, and someone whose portfolio makes sense with your company. I can't tell you how many times I hear from investors that they have someone in front of them and it turns out it's not a good match. They don't invest in that kind of a company. They don't invest that amount of money. Like maybe they're a VC and the person's looking for seed funding, so it doesn't make any sense. Or they have a competitor that's sitting there right square in their portfolio, so of course they're not going to invest. So I think that's number one. I think once you get in front of a good investor, it's of course knowing your own company inside out, knowing all your numbers, knowing who you're marketing to, knowing what you're doing on that side and how you're going to grow your business. But it's also about making a coherent statement about what you do.
Do you have a process for that, like an elevator pitch process?
You know, I always recommend that people have an elevator pitch and that within their longer pitch that they have what I call the pitch within a pitch so that they make some coherent statement at the very top of their pitch, which will give context to the rest of what they say. Because, you know, I've sat through people's pitch and sometimes you'll be 15 minutes in and you're like, I have no idea what this person is talking
about. A 15-minute pitch, wow.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I can't tell you how often you'll get to the end of a pitch and an investor will be like, I just don't know what you do. And that's terrible in so many ways.
Yeah.
First of all, because then you're like, well, how do I now explain it to this person? But it also, from the investor side, the investor doesn't know how to give good feedback to that person. They don't know how to make a suggestion to that person. They don't know who to connect that person to. So I think that's a big issue for a lot of people and something I always suggest to make that pitch within a pitch very early in whatever they're saying.
Is there a duration that you would say, like, you know, don't go over 60 seconds?
For an elevator pitch?
I know it's typically 15 seconds for an elevator pitch, maybe 30. Everyone's going to say something slightly different. What's yours?
I say 30 okay. Within the context of a longer pitch.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're all ADD these days.
Yeah.
And what you don't want to have is you don't want that VC or investor to start getting antsy
pulling out their phone and
playing
texting.
With their phone.
I've seen that before.
Oh, yes, it definitely happens. I mean, these are busy people, so they're like, if they don't feel comfortable within a few minutes, they're like, their attention span is just gone.
Is there a process that you can share that's sort of like a template for the best way to create an elevator pitch?
I'm a big fan of keeping it short and simple and saying what you do, who you do it for, and what they get out of it. That's something that I think is really helpful for anyone. Whenever you're in any kind of elevator pitch situation, if you're at a cocktail party, I do this for these people and this is why they like it. Or if you're even in an elevator, you have that 10 seconds with the person, go for it.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining me today is Lisa Su, founder of The Winning Pitch. I know that you say that Shark Tank isn't really the type of environment that is a real pitch environment. So could you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, I think of Shark Tank as kind of like the Dancing with the Stars of pitching.
Yeah.
you know, I love Dancing with the Stars too, but is it a real dance competition? Not really.
Yeah.
I do like Shark Tank in that it gets all these issues out there. You start to get an idea of what a pitch is, of questions that an investor may ask, but is it a real pitch environment? Not really.
So what is a real pitch environment versus Shark Tank? Because I think a lot of people, maybe a lot of people tuned in right now, this is like, what? Like, you just ruined the show. You pulled the curtain back. They thought that that was real pitching. So what is a real pitch environment?
I think a real pitch environment oftentimes is you have some kind of warm intro to an investor. So they have maybe a little bit of a sense of who you are. Hopefully you've been developing a relationship with that investor over a period of time. A lot of VCs that I think are very good would say that they invest in lines, not dots. So they want to see your progress over a period of time, as opposed to you're just here at this moment on the graph. They want to see, okay, so 6 months ago you said you were going to take on 3 top salespeople and you were going to hit this point in revenue. Hey, 6 months later, did you do that? If you did that, oh, that's a good sign. I think you're starting to get onto something. Your strategy might be good, or you have a good user acquisition plan. Oh, and you say at this point, now that you've hit that point in revenue, you're going to start expanding in this way. Oh, you know, 6 months later, I see you expand in this way. That's what I would consider a good line.
Okay.
That an investor will be like, oh, maybe it's starting to be worth my time to start having more extended conversations with you.
So how can a company or an entrepreneur know when is the right time to go after an investor?
It's going to be different for everyone, certainly. But I think a good time for people to start thinking about looking for an investor, I think of an investor, or specifically a venture capitalist, as kind of the rocket fuel on your growth. Have you gotten to a point where you need that rocket fuel on your growth? That's the time to really start thinking about it. Hopefully it's not when you're about to miss your payroll in a couple weeks.
That's
not the right time.
Yeah.
I do encourage people to start thinking, oh, 6 months from now, I think we're going to hit that point. We should start thinking about this. Who are the people that we can get on their radar as someone who's a good prospect for investment?
So when does a company know they should raise money? For example, we've got some traction, we've got a proven model, we just need to pour gas on the fire and raise some money. What are some other examples of where somebody could say, like, hey, when you're in this situation, you should look for investors? I think a lot of times I hear people looking for money when there's really no need for the money. Maybe they just want to get money because it sounds fun or everybody's doing it.
I think there are a few different times that are really good. One when it makes strategic sense. Can you develop a relationship with an investor who has the connections in the industry to take you further along? Also, when there's a synergistic match within their portfolio, that's a good time to start thinking about it. Hey, we're getting to a point, maybe our widget over here and your widget that's in your portfolio over here, maybe they'd be a good match and make more sense. That's a good time to think about these kinds of things. And that's also a good way to think about investors as well. You know, maybe your Uncle Dan, who has made a couple $1 million doing oral surgery as a dentist, can give you the money, but is Uncle Dan going to really help you along your way?
As a strategic partner,
maybe not so much. Although if you're missing payroll, you know, hey, we all got to do what we got to do.
Well, we could go on for days about these tips. They've been extremely valuable. Thank you for coming on our show.
Oh, thanks, Mark.
I appreciate it.
I enjoyed it.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
I'm Darren Kafanoki with free startup legal advice. Tim in Miami asks, are there any situations where verbal agreements are suitable, or must everything be documented in writing when starting a business? Great question, Tim. Best practice is certainly to reduce things to a writing. Make it crystal clear about who is supposed to do what by when and what happens if they screw up. That being said, keep in mind that oral agreements are still perfectly enforceable, but there are certain exceptions, certain kinds of contracts that must be reduced to a writing. There are certain popular categories, including those contracts that can't be fully performed within 1 year, contracts that apply to the transfer of an interest in land, the sale of goods of $500 or more, or answering for somebody else's debt. So, be careful about what you say and what you do, because it could obligate you by way of a legally binding contract.
Next on Business Rockstars.
I mean, don't fear failure. Tests are wonderful, they are your lessons. What you're trying to do is do multiple tests and shorten them and don't spend a lot of capital and then learn from them. So don't feel fear failure at all. And always try to be calm and collective. Never be anxious, unsettled. If you are anxious, unsettled, and stressed, go take a nap. When you wake up, you'll be, wow, I'm more clear-headed, and you can make a much more exact decision that's going to help your company. And I think the best thing is there is a way out of every situation. So if you don't see it today, don't execute on a decision. Wait. Like, nothing's ever going to happen. Like, you think, if I don't act today, something bad's going to happen. But the longer you wait, the better the result, almost always.
If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business.
Meet Evan Goldberg, founder of NetSuite.
I had to learn that the hard way with my first company. That's why I started NetSuite. I needed to see everything that was going on with my business in one place, so we built the world's first cloud business system. And after 20 years, over 16,000 companies run their businesses on NetSuite. Everything you need to keep growing is in one place. Financials, HR, commerce, customer info, and more. NetSuite gives you the visibility and control you need to make smart decisions and grow with confidence. That's why companies who use NetSuite grow 3 times faster than the S&P 500.
Find out the rest of Evan's story and get your free guide titled 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits at netsuite.com/bigger. That's netsuite.com/bigger for your free guide, 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits. Go right now to netsuite.com/bigger.
You shouldn't have.
This is Business Rockstar.
Hi, I'm Mark Lack, CEO of Shorten the Gap, inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. How can failures become the foundation to your success? I'm here with Jeffrey McIntosh, CEO and founder of T-Book. And like so many entrepreneurs, right, the level of success they have is in direct proportion to the failures that they've learned from. And so I know you have a really interesting story. Why don't you share with us, what have some of the failures been that you've learned from that have really put you on the path to the success that you have now?
Absolutely, Mark. And it's great to be on the show. I think that it's better to look at failures more as lessons rather than saying, oh, a failure or fear them, because there's so much we can learn from them. So I always tell people, you want to fail fast, you want to try out new things, you want to test, you want to build something great. And I think even in life, it can start that way. That was kind of how I started to be an entrepreneur, was a series of failed events or my businesses didn't go through, or my college wasn't working right. I went to college when I was very young. I was about 16 years old. I was working in a very high-end restaurant, very self-destructive lifestyle. I was doing like full-time school, double majoring, and it just got to the point where I couldn't bear it anymore. And that's when I first found tea. And when I first sat down and I enjoyed a cup of loose leaf tea, it wasn't just, you know, some tea bag or blended stuff that is all the rage now. It was pure loose leaf tea. And it gave me that moment that just said, like, what am I doing? Like, this is what I want to be doing for the rest of my life. And I wasn't doing well in college. The work was bearing me down. So I said, I'll quit my college. I'll quit my high paying job and I'll do this for free. And I didn't have a direction. And I realized, well, I have nothing to lose, especially at a young age, when we have so much more that we can risk and have a higher reward. Just go for it. Just try to test as much as possible. I'll try to do this. I'll try to apprentice. But try to learn and try to fail fast and test and build something bigger.
Something I think is so cool about you is you're 26 years old and you're fluent in Chinese, one of the hardest languages to learn. And even cooler than that, you go back and forth between the U.S. and China multiple times throughout the year. Tell us a little bit more about T-Book and this loose leaf tea that I had before we got on camera here, which is incredible, by the way. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you do when you go to China and how did you end up creating T-Book and finding this incredible tea?
Sure. So it all started in that little tea shop. I had that taste and then I was invited to go to China. At that time, I couldn't speak any Chinese at all. Like, I was this young kid. I went to China. I was like, woo, I go to China. This is a crazy culture. And immediately I got hit with culture shock So I was only supposed to be there 2 weeks. It ended up being 6 months. There was no communication with other Americans. I never spoke English.
How did it go from 2 weeks to 6 months?
So I was supposed to go visit some tea mountains over there, which was
life-changing. What's a tea mountain?
So a tea mountain is in southwest Yunnan. They're very large mountains where the entire mountain agricultural thing is just tea. They're just producing tea.
Wow.
So there's a massive market down there. So we went to go visit these old trees. Some of these trees can live up to easily over 1,000 years.
1,000 years.
Yeah. And the oldest living tea tree is in Fengqing. It's 3,200 years old.
Wow.
You have to get 4 to 5 people to kind of hug around it. So we went to these tea trees. We went back to the main city of Kunming in southwest China and Yunnan. And I met a tea master, Luo Wanyu of Denong Tea Company.
What's a tea master?
So a tea master is someone who's been, it's a very foreign concept, right?
Yeah.
But someone who's been studying tea preferably their whole life. They have a tremendous amount of experience of agricultural processing, fermentation, storage. So it goes a little bit beyond what we would know in a tea bag, right? We're dealing with someone that's very tangible, very similar.
So not to a Starbucks barista.
Yeah, no, a little bit farther than that.
Okay.
But very tangible to like high-end wine. And so I went to go meet her, and she said, wow, this is strange. An American person likes tea. They use like a little teapot, Gaiwan. Come work for me. At this point, she can't speak English, I can't speak Chinese. So I said, what do I have to lose?
I'll Perfect relationship,
yeah.
right?
So I was like, I got $500 in my back pocket, I'll just do it, I'll stay here. And that turned into like 6 months later. And what I did was I really pushed myself. I made myself not talk to people in English-speaking language, always in Chinese. I had developed my own kind of opinion until I could speak enough, and then moved from there. And I actually ended up in Chinese prison. Which was a really, really like wake-up call for me because of an overstayed visa, and I was also importing, exporting tea, very high-end tea. But when I got in that position, I was like, oh wow, I'm in a really bad spot. I don't know where I'm going to be going. I can either take advantage of this situation. So I said, well, all these people are from the local area, so I can learn more about the local dialect. So I can understand the language in that part of China more easily than the typical Mandarin. And then I learned a little bit more about Chinese business, I built some relations, and then I left and I just took that to the next level of speaking Chinese and doing business and then kind of opening my first company.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars here with Jeffrey McIntosh, CEO and founder of TeaBook. And we're talking about how he goes to China every so often throughout the year to study tea and use the best high-quality tea for his drinks, as well as how you ended up in jail. So go a little bit deeper on the story of how you ended up in jail.
Sure. It was a number of events. I kind of overstayed my visa by a ridiculous amount, by a number of months, and I was importing, exporting tea. And so the first time they came, they said, well, there's this issue. We can get you a new visa. But then the next day, I was kind of carted off to...
How long were you in the jail?
I was over there about a little over 2 weeks.
Wow. Did you actually speak Chinese by then?
At that time, it was really bad.
Okay.
But I remember I went in there, and I was the only foreigner to go into the prison there. And they treated me really nice. They wanted to be my friends.
Wow.
It was strange. But I also was able to learn the local dialect a little bit better and learn interaction more. And it was just in such a closed environment where I felt like I had no way out. I didn't know when I was going to leave. And it was just, I have to overcome this feeling. And so how can I make the best of it? And I'm a really strong believer of no matter where you are, there is a way out of every situation. And you can learn and take something away from it, which we did. I got bailed out by one of my people I know very well. And then I started doing business with them later on, which became great success. So I learned about Chinese culture and the language.
What has been one of the best lessons that you've learned from being in the completely different culture over in China?
Well, I think it's best never to look at something as right and wrong, right? When I first went to China, it was a new experience. I didn't speak the language or the culture. I started to judge things. I said, this is wrong. I don't like this. These things in China are weird. But when you go somewhere and do, even in business, you take away your personal thoughts. There is no right and wrong. There just is, right? So however their culture is, it's perfect for how it is, and become like them, like become Chinese, become the culture. And you'll notice it's easier because life is always gray, right? There's no right, there's no wrong.
It's relative.
It's all relative, right? We have our own opinions. So just go in and be like water.
So for people who are tuning in right now, entrepreneurs especially, who need to have high levels of energy, I know that green tea and tea in general can be a great source for energy. What do you say to the people that are primarily coffee drinkers that kind of have X-nayed tea as an option?
Sure, and I won't even tell coffee drinkers switch to tea. I'll say it's a different tool for a different time. Loose leaf tea has a lot of L-theanine, and you'll notice it's going to help relax your nervous system and give you alertness. So you're not going to be jittery like coffee. There's not going to be that crash.
See, I'm on both right now. I'm on coffee and this awesome tea. So
well, maybe this kind of sustain you out, right? Maybe calm you down a little bit. But it gives you that moment of mindfulness. I really think that the process of making tea can really give you that calmness and centeredness you need to really focus.
What has that shift been as a young entrepreneur and on your journey to becoming successful? What have some of those lessons been like?
Because I think at a younger age, especially with millennials and there's so much access to information, we can easily get stubborn. Right, we really think our idea is important. We get too passionate, too egotistical. Surround yourself with really, really smart people. And also try to put yourself in an incubator or co-working space and really put yourself and interact with those people. How can we work together? Always be thinking, if I'm not doing this business, can I do another business? Is there another way? Get out of I do this or I don't do this. Get out of that buy thinking process. Really say, what are all my options? And really start to open up a gray area. And then once I started the Founders Institute, I graduated that. It really put me in a perspective of revenue models and profits and making money and making sustained. And T-Books are for scalable venture. And I think that's where I've had my most hardships and I've learned the most.
Some great lessons from a young business rock star and the Tea Master, Jeffrey McIntosh, CEO and founder of the T-Book. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Kriebel.
I remember watching my grandmother spend hours doing housework, like washing dishes, doing laundry, and hanging it out to dry. They called it Laundry Day because that's how long it took. Labor-saving appliances were among the great advancements of the last century, especially washing machines and dishwashers. They freed generations of women from the drudgery of such chores. By 1983, dishwashers could finish in 30 minutes, and laundry took less than an hour. Then, the government began regulating water and energy use. Congress adopted federal standards, and today's appliances take three times longer. Now, many people wash and dry things twice, so they're not saving water or energy. The government ought to tend to its own dirty laundry and leave mine alone. It's just not that complicated.
For more, check out our podcast at lensofliberty.org.
This is Business Rockstars.
Hi, I'm Mark Lack, CEO of Shorten the Gap, inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm here with Jeffrey McIntosh, CEO and founder of T-Book. And something I love doing with any of the guests that come on the show is what we call our 60-second CEO. I'm going to fire off some rapid questions to
come
you.
Come on,
and all you're going to do is answer them. Ready?
Let's do it.
Here we go. All right, who's your favorite entrepreneur?
Elon Musk.
Favorite movie?
Ooh, I haven't seen a movie in a long time.
Okay, what's your biggest pet peeve?
People not being on time.
Coffee or tea?
Tea, come on, that's not a question.
First thing people notice about you?
I'm kind of crazy about tea.
What keeps you up at night?
Business.
First app you check on your phone in the morning?
I have a dumb phone, don't have a smartphone.
A dumb phone, flip phone?
Yep.
If you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Southwest China, every time.
Last thing you do before bed?
Drink tea.
What superpower do you wish you had? Come on.
I know, it's a tough one. Be able to transport, teleport.
Okay, that's a good one. Describe yourself in one word.
Tea.
I don't even know if that makes any sense. We'll go transition straight into that. How does tea describe yourself in one word as a person?
Sure, I just think that one, it started to represent more than just a beverage. It was like, oh wow, there's a tremendous amount of history and culture. And when you drink tea, there's a certain amount of knowledge that can come with it. Oh, I need to prepare it correctly. And you can tell a lot about an individual by how they prepare tea, right? If they're really haphazardly.
I didn't know that, wow. Okay.
Right, you haphazardly throw it all over the place. You can tell someone's not really caring. And in China, even more so, because it's a cultural, historical item. So they should cherish it. And if they cherish it and prepare it correctly and it tastes good, then you know they're probably treating their business and family the same way. So the way people prepare tea, I can learn a lot from them. So I try to make sure that I'm always being very careful with what I'm brewing and how I interact with tea. And so,
something we talked about that I thought was pretty interesting was you said it's more than just having another beverage and drinking tea, but you said you're company T-Book is actually more about creating a lifestyle. So could you go a little bit more into what do you mean by creating a lifestyle around tea?
Sure, and this is a great point because this is going beyond, you know, startup making money. This is going to a broader picture. And when you're starting a company, what's your end goal? Is it just like, let's sell a bunch of product, make a bunch of money and sell it? Or do you want to build something bigger? And that's what we're really trying to do here. So right now, there's so much kind of noise and there's so much growth in specialty loose leaf teas. It's massive, it's 25% growth. So everyone's trying to get in.
What's the industry as a whole, by the way? Like a couple billion?
It's over 12 billion.
Okay.
It's going to rapidly get to 22 billion.
Okay.
So, but that's really looking at it in terms of a beverage, like ready to drink, like exactly what you're doing. You just drink it, you forget about it. But in China, you sit down, you drink tea, they have gaiwans, they have teapots, they have high-end tea, they have historical tea, they can get thousands of dollars. But they're interacting with, I go to your house, you have a tea table, let's sit down, we'll talk business. And tea is it facilitates good conversation. So we're trying to get to the point where it's not just, oh, another kombucha, or another soda pop. It's like, you go and you sit down, you have a business meeting over tea. You go in the morning, you meet your friend. You wake up, you want to drink tea. So incorporating in all aspects, because that industry is a $100 billion industry. But it's a higher risk, because it's a new behavior. So how can you teach your customers about a new behavior? That's a huge hurdle point. And the best way to do that is to find out what you want to teach them and take away all the friction points. So even with tea, like how is there friction with the consumer? Tea to water ratio. How long the tea is steeped and how long do I leave the tea in there, right? So, and the water temperature.
And how much loose leaf to put in there, which is what you were sharing with me earlier.
Exactly. So I said, well, it's going to be, so let's take away all these friction points. Let's pre-portion all the tea. Let's put the temperature on the bottle. Let's make it so they don't have to take the leaves out of the water and it's all ready to go. Just add water. So that way they can experience the product without too many new obstacles. And I think that broader vision's really important, and that's what we're focusing on. Because it's not just T-Book, right? 80% of our consumers in the long run will have this ready to go, easy to drink. But 10% of those consumers will start to say, how can I convert them to something higher? So they will start to say, what's better tea? And maybe they're going to want to buy that $200 tea cake, or they want to buy that $150 teapot, right?
There's always somebody out there.
There's always someone out there. But so you don't just want to say, what's the end goal? I want to sell this product. But after that, how can I convert those products to an upsell, right? And to a higher experience that can benefit them.
To serve them in a greater way, right?
In a greater way, right? And I think always focus on quality and going to the next step.
Some great tips. And something I want to correlate, we're talking about, you know, lifestyle and culture and related to tea, which is something that, you know, your company is all about. How does that relate into your business? How do you create lifestyle and culture for your team, for your company? And how does that translate out into the success of your company? Because I know culture is such a huge thing. You hear like, you know, Tony Hsieh from Zappos, culture, right?
Sure.
So how do you create culture and lifestyle in your company?
I think a lot of it happens on the China side, because luckily in this day and age, we have so much access to technology that we can work in really small teams. Believe it or not, T-Book's like operating with three people on the American side. But what really happens is with my relationships in China, since business is so different, you want to treat them with mutual respect. So I'm very, very close with my Chinese partners. I'm communicating with them every day because they're a whole supply chain. So bringing that culture of understanding their whole environment, doing business the way they do, and then bringing it over and educating my consumers. Everyone in my company, they're drinking tea, right? They love tea. They like the product. That's the first thing. Everyone should love the product you're selling. And make sure people are happy, mutual respect. Don't be so degrading. Really allow give your employees the tools they need, and then allow them to fail. And then when you start to notice them fail, find an advisor. Find someone who's really good at social media and say, hey, I'm gonna set you up with a 30-minute meeting. And that's all it could take for your intern to go from not knowing about social media to bringing thousands of followers. So I think the giving the tools to the interns, really believing in your employees and introducing them to great people will change the whole structure of your business.
I think we can both agree that failure is something that's a stepping stone to success. And also, to go on top of that, another thing that really attributes to people's success is their habits. And the obvious habit for you, you've mentioned it a few times, is drinking tea throughout the day, in the morning, at night. But what are some other habits that you have that really attribute to your success outside of just drinking tea? And that sounds silly for some people, that drinking tea attributes to your success. But what are some other habits that you have that really are, you know, the result of your success?
I think this is a great question. I think it goes to a number of personal levels and business levels. Like, it's really important what you do in your personal life and how you, like, even respect your family and respect your friends. And you really want to surround yourself with people that are really mutually beneficial. So I've had a lot of breaks apart of companies. I've done investment. There's been fallings out. And I've lost, like, all my friends. And I realized who are my real friends? Who are the people that are always there to support me? Mm. And those are the only people that you should be surrounding with, especially if you're an entrepreneur, because you're already going on an insane, like, I'm gonna go be an entrepreneur and work 150 hours a week and get paid no money, and I'm not gonna be able to see movies anymore, I'm gonna have no time. So the people that you surround yourself should really be focused on your end goal, which is becoming a successful individual entrepreneur, and they shouldn't be so focused on minimal things. Like, let's go hang out and kick it. And a lot of those things don't benefit you as an entrepreneur. So always, every interaction, I don't want to be too business oriented, but when you're hanging out with friends or going to dinner, you should have some kind of talk that could be mutually beneficial for both of you, for your success. So really be careful who your friends are. Pay attention and support your family as best you can, or at least respect them. And those kind of habits will start to, you'll understand, wow, when I have a meeting with someone I don't know, I start to mutually respect them. Because when you respect other people, they listen to you. And then you can start to move on from there. I've cut out a lot of addiction things like smartphones. Like, it's very, I do my email twice a day. And if you need to contact me, you have to send me a text message or a phone call. I'm not going to be on my phone 24/7. And I think that's helped because it allows me to sit down, relax, and think and drink tea and not be like business 24/7 and not being able to sleep. Because once that starts to pile up on you, you can't be focused anymore. And I always tell people, the longer you wait, the better the result. The moment you're anxious, unsettled, quick, that's when you fail. So you just want to be calm. The longer you wait, the better the result. It's going to be okay if you thoroughly think about what you're doing.
Some great tips, and I want to touch on that in just a minute. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. I'm here with Jeffrey McIntosh, CEO and founder of T-Book. We're talking about how important it is to surround yourself with the right people. And it reminds me of the old saying, you're the sum of the five people you surround yourself with most. So how important it is for you to make sure that you pick the right inner circle? Short and sweet, to the point, sure. How important is it?
So important. Started the company, I had like 25 advisors, went nowhere. Spent tons of money, failed. Then I decided, I found people that only had built $100 million companies, so validation with their work, not what they say, and then bring them on board, and I selected three advisors, and I have a sales advisor for product selling, I have a brand advisor, and I have someone that's focused on supporting my passion and quality. So these three advisors are my foundation, and I really pointed, they must have validation in their business and their life. You must like and support how they live their life and do their business, and then go to them for very specific key questions. Bullet pointed emails, not tangents.
Let's talk about marketing for a minute. How do you market this?
Well, it's
online, and maybe you're saying online, and one of the big things is you need to taste it and try it. So how do you overcome that in your marketing online?
It's difficult. Marketing online is difficult for a product like this that's so hands-on. Majority of our customers are word of mouth and conventions in person. Like, that's like 90% of our attraction. Now, in the next month or so, we're starting to go online. And the only way you can do that is to create really valuable content. High quality pictures, short videos. Don't do long videos anymore. Do minute videos, 45 second videos, 15 second Instagram videos. But they're beautiful, they're high quality, and all it is focused on is the beauty of tea. It's not focused on selling the product. And you're gonna start to see us starting to brand in that way. And we're starting to see some conversions. But it's difficult with a product like this because it's so hands-on. But I say, honest content.
What made you wanna go with online? I think maybe some entrepreneurs listening right now would be like, that's the wrong strategy. The strategy is to be in person, allowing them to taste it and try it. Why online?
That's funny. It kind of is the wrong strategy, but it's working. we actually wanted to go towards retail, but you have to raise an incredible amount of money, and we didn't have validation. So we're going towards that direction of a retail. It has to happen. You have to have offline, online. You're seeing Amazon. You're seeing Nordstrom's. They're doing that more and more. How do you get?
So what gives you the belief? Because I would almost, to play devil's advocate with you, don't think that if you come up with the right strategy, you don't have to raise a lot of money. But what would you say to that? Why do you think you have to raise a lot of money?
Well, that's great. Well, we couldn't raise a lot of money, so now we're working on no money, and now we're doing fantastic, right?
Okay, all right.
So that failure helped us. And so once with a little bit of money, it made us start to think.
As we come to a wrap here, I want to know the three best tips you have for any entrepreneur tuning in right now. Because we're talking about tea,
sure.
So I wanted to just boil it down to the essence here. What are the three best tips that somebody can learn as an entrepreneur from that?
100% don't ever fail. I mean, don't fear failure. Tests are wonderful. They are your lessons. What you're trying to do is do multiple tests and shorten them and don't spend a lot of capital and then learn from them. So don't fear failure at all. And always try to be calm and collective. Never be anxious, unsettled. If you are anxious, unsettled, and stressed, go take a nap. When you wake up, you'll be, wow, I'm more clear-headed, and you can make a much more exact decision that's gonna help your company. And I think the best thing is there is a way out of every situation. So if you don't see it today, don't execute on a decision. Wait, Like, nothing's ever going to happen. Like, you think, if I don't act today, something bad's going to happen. But the longer you wait, the better the result, almost always.
Three great tips from Jeffrey McIntosh, CEO and founder of T-Book. Thanks so much for joining us,
absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely.
Something I wanted to add, too, is you have such a generous offer for our audience here. Share that with us real quick.
Sure, absolutely. So if you go on to tbook.co and you type in business rock stars, you can actually get 20% off any of our high-quality loose-leaf teas online or a tumbler, anything you want.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and on our website, businessrockstars.com.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's R-A-N-K to 79645.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/free. That's ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
This is Business Rockstar.
We are here to inspire, to inform, and connect the community of entrepreneurs. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Glad to have you here. G.K. Parrish Philp is with us. He is the co-founder of Shopswell. What is Shopswell?
Shopswell is a community of shoppers that come together to help each other shop smarter together.
That's my word, community of entrepreneurs.
Community of entrepreneurs,
but
right.
There are so many shopping apps. What makes yours better?
Really, foremost...
It's not an app.
Foremost...
Go ahead.
Yeah, is the community itself. Mm-hmm. And then we do believe that our mission helps differentiate us. There's so many shopping apps, but so many of them are trying to sell something or exploit your privacy data or do something that's just, you know, not really beneficial to the consumers. We're really trying to help people shop smarter.
Right. Why did you come up with this idea?
Yeah, we saw some real problems in online shopping. It was like a Dickens novel. It was the best of times and the worst of times. Amazon can drop something that you've ordered onto your doorstep in an hour, which is magical. But trying to figure out what thing to order was becoming increasingly
difficult. What do you mean, like
difficult.
Brand or thing?
Just if you're shopping for something and you don't know exactly what to get, you don't know what's right for you, just doing the research and paging through all of these blogs and the information, you're not sure if they're just affiliate marketing to you, and then you log into Facebook and you're being retargeted with all these ads, and you're like, who is looking at my browsing history? It just seemed like it was very, very seedy and chaotic. There are all these price comparison engines that aren't really giving you the best price. They're all kind of pay to play. So we saw a real opportunity to kind of disrupt the upfront shopping experience.
Can you guarantee all those things?
We don't track the products that you're looking at. We don't keep track of your browsing history. We don't pay anybody for selling a specific product or shilling for a brand.
How many people work for you?
We have about 7.
And what do? They all just spend all their time on the web looking for different shopping things?
Oh, boy. You know, in a startup like this, everybody wears so many hats. You know, we have people have their area of specialization and expertise, but they're doing so many different things. We have a person who does really just coding and product development and technology. We have somebody who's an expert in social media marketing. We have a business development guy who's just an absolute rock star at sales and developing relationships. But in any given day, we're all just sloshing around.
GK Parish Philp is our, it's almost a French name, GK. But it's GK.
We're
going to go, that's all right, we're going to go with GK. We have plenty of time, by the way. From Shopswell, he's a co-founder of Shopswell. We were talking earlier that there's, I mean, you said thousands, I don't know if a thousand's right, but there are many, many shopping websites, a lot of them. And the holidays, I assume, are your biggest time, but now it's year-round, right?
It is. It's really a year-round thing.
Because of the convenience of shopping online?
Absolutely. It's the convenience, the prices are often better online. It's just easy and do it from the comfort of your home without wasting a lot of gasoline driving all over the place.
And that's what gets people like me in trouble.
It can.
I'll sit there all night and shop, and all of a sudden 20 boxes arrive the next day, which is fine. That's why I like those websites. What's the biggest mistake? Mistake might not be the word, but what's the biggest setback or mistake you made as a CEO?
There are so many.
Well, that's good, because you learn from each one.
You learn from them all, and you realize, you know, there are always mistakes. You know, so one big thing that stands in the history of our company in particular is Shopswell itself was a pivot, and we started out as a company called Placewell with a different product, and we realized that just wasn't working. And so we pivoted to Shopswell. And as an entrepreneur, I think the thing you're always fighting is time. So you have no regrets.
You can't buy any time.
You can't
anywhere.
Buy time.
It's the website that sells it.
And you could say, I wish we'd done that sooner, made that decision sooner.
Well, it brings up a good point, because how do you solve that? How do you do it sooner? You know what I mean? Is that experience?
It's a real challenge, because you never know. You don't really know the counterfactual. There's an opportunity cost to everything, and you don't know what would have been had you done something differently.
But you can't think about that.
You can't think about it.
Because we could all have gray hair.
You just
or
have
no
to
hair.
Go and go. And the one thing you have to know is time is always a limited, precious resource. Yeah. So you don't want to ever stall or delay.
By the way, I have gray hair and no hair, so I have the double thing. What social media do you use? How important is social media to you?
I'm kind of a fan of Twitter, because it ends up being a very rapid, easy way for me to digest a lot of information at once. I'm in and out of Facebook. It just sort of seems to be.
I'm tired of hearing
a bit
about
too
people's
much.
Sick dogs.
In a political season, Facebook is probably not a healthy place to be.
No, you got to delete your Facebook, especially this year.
Yeah,
and come back when the president.
Maybe it'll come back after the election.
Right. Yeah. But you like Twitter, because Twitter is actually everything.
It's an easy way for me to get the temperature on something, to get a zeitgeist. Let's say I'm evaluating a new tool for my business. I say, what's the thinking? What are the cool kids thinking about this tool? And you just pull it up, and in 30 seconds, you know, this is great, or it has some issues.
Well, you can also ask, too. I mean, it's a great free survey, you know.
Engage some conversations.
Right.
It's very quick and easy.
We're talking about your competition, how much there are. Do you study them at all? Do you see what they're doing right or wrong in your mind?
I love competition. I love having competitors. Always taking a sidelong glance at the competition and never staring at them.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien, GK Parish Philip, or as I call him, GK Parish Philip. How do you find and retain really good employees?
Boy, the best way is to let them come to you.
Mm-hmm. How does that work?
I'll tell you a great hack that I have. So here's a hack. I have at times gone into universities, colleges, and offered to give guest lectures and teach the class about some piece of entrepreneurship or business or technology or something that's involved. And they're always excited to have that, because they'd like to engage with the careers of the students. Then you go to the professor later and you say, you know what, who's awesome?
Do you find that the millennial crowd is more interested in a startup, perhaps, as a regular business?
Definitely, they're interested in a different lifestyle than the lifestyle of 40, 50 years ago.
Shopswell is the name of the company, shopswell.com. An app is coming soon, right?
That's right.
GK, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This has been Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. We'll see you next time.
This information is given with the understanding that the host nor Business Rockstars is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.